Chapter 68. Malaria. By morning, I'm schlepping over the frosted snow toward the base, trying not to limp for the pliers in my shoe. It's bright and blue out, and pretty enough for me to be pissed at the world for putting such a lovely face on such a shit-infested day. The sea lolls against the coast like a dancing grey lover. It spits little bursts of salt that coast up in the air and then drizzle down on my shiny curled hair. Maeve might be all closed up to a world that's beaten the hell out of whatever pretty dream she had for herself when she was freed from the mines, but she knows how to make an escapee from a genocide look like a dumb mine lass with rosy cheeks and flailing skirts and nothing to her knowing except how to coax fat-ass spiders into puking silk and how to get rust-blood drill boys spitting seed enough to populate a township. I stride down what counts as the main road for this whipped town, tucking my head like I've got something to hide. I got a bundle under my arm. It ain't the orb. I left that buried in the cinders, and Ulysses with Maeve. All I got is a bucket of salted fish from Maeve's pitiable larder and enough ankle showing for the red-hand butcher boys smoking burners in front of the old base to forget about their morning snort of grey line. They mate like bees to me. No manners. They're conquerors. What they see is theirs, and they're wondering how the picker didn't already take his wife tax of me. They pester about, asking questions. I act all domestic and frazzled, careening about like I'm a drunk sparrow trying to find gaps in the trees. They pull my hands to see if I've a ring on. They hem me in and coax me into a smoke. I take a burner between my lips as one rests his hand on my ass, cupping inside the cheek, nearly where the magazine of teeth are secured by epoxy to my deeper parts. I act timid, like I can't resist the absolute magnetism of his hand halfway up my ass. The other boys get jealous, and the biggest shoulders the other aside.
"Never had a burner,"
I say dozily to biggest. "We got 'em by the carton back at the fortress," he brags. I try not to tongue my aching gums. A good part of my grey matter wants to melt his face right there, or maybe aim a little lower. Another part feels bad for the stupid bastard. He's pimply, not even in his 20s. He thinks he's something because he's got a gun and big hands and big shoulders. But the dumb fuck's never seen a Telemannus in war gear, or the Sovereign sitting there with a cup of tea and the weight of 10 billion on her. He's never seen Victra standing there like a god, giving life to a baby that'd change the world if he ever got the chance to grow. If the dumb bastard did have a notion of his true size, he'd crumple up and die for understanding how petrifyingly small he actually is. I know how small I am, but I also know how small they are. The last part of my grey matter, the most important part, is occupied with the idea of melting the guts out of Harmony, sawing her head off and feeding the rest of her to a fire. I'd have done it for Tyrion alone and maybe felt guilty. But then her stimmed-up rapists had to ruin my sister too, had to butcher her children, cut them with sling blades like they were onions. Then they had to kill my pa when he couldn't even walk. Then they had to nail a baby to a tree. I don't give a piss if they're human, if they got problems, if they got drugs in them, if they had hard lives, if they got reasons. All I know is one has his hand digging into my backside, and I'm smiling, bearing it because I know I'm going to die. But I'm going to take as many of them with me as I can, and maybe, just maybe, find out if my friends are still alive. The big one leads me toward the old base, takes me around the shoulders, whispering so close I can smell the morning eggs and tobacco on his breath. His fingers graze my right tit. His boys saunter behind, half ripe jealous, half puffed up by his conquest. He steers me past the louses at the door and tries to pull me sidelong into some room where he'll rape me first and then share me like a half-done burner.
"Never been inside here,"
I coo loudly in my best approximation of Maeve's accent.
"This is what it looks like. Sure, there were greys about once, maybe gold. Bellona's, weren't they? I've always wanted to go to Olympia."
"Never mind about Olympia," he says. "It's a crow shithole now. In here's where the fun is." But the noise has perked the ears of bigger dogs, and before he can pull me into the room, one of the picker's boys comes around the corner. He's got a metal arm, kind eyes, and a beautiful head of rusty hair.
"What you got there, Toro?"
"Oh, just a friend," Big Toro says, all meek-like. "None yours, Duncan."
"You know the fish are under Harmony's hand,"
the handsome man says. He sips his coffee, and those bright eyes of his look me over. He seems in his mid-20s. Cocky, but a kindness to him.
"Picker already got the tax,"
my idiot says, tilting me away protectively.
"This one's an old maid. Probably already got a canyon from 3, 4.
"You had little ones, miss?" Duncan asks me, polite-like.
"Not a one," I say.
"Husband?"
"Gone and died," I say.
"Clan you?"
"Beta."
"Omicron here." He squints at me and smiles awkwardly. "How many years?"
"Not but 20, I say.
He snorts.
"More like 24.
He tosses the dregs of his coffee on the floor and takes one step toward Toro, flicks his robot fingers, and the arm around my shoulders disappears. Toro gives me a good push.
"Take the slut," he mutters. "Probably got a dead cave anyhow."
Duncan politely tells me he's going to frisk me. He ain't nearly thorough enough. When he's done, he wipes the snow off my face, like he's bringing me to shelter. He leads me on into a bigger room that's got live computers and a few boys hunched over them. The pickers having breakfast of eggs and fish and pudding.
"What's what?"
he asks when Duncan brings me in. Picker is lean and fox-like, clever behind the eyes, and sinister as all hell.
"Fresh catch," Duncan says. "Fresh? She's a relic."
"Might be, but seedless, so seems, and it's better than babies."
"Already got the tax. Toss her back."
"Them's kids," Duncan says. "You know it ain't right." Picker eats his eggs and stares at him.
"You said you didn't need a wife."
"She ain't for me. Some of them girls ain't even bled yet."
"So?"
"So it ain't right," Duncan says, setting his hands on his belt. Whoever he is, he's got some pull. Picker doesn't take it as a challenge, but the other boys are watching. Picker pushes his eggs away and lights a burner. Through the smoke, he appraises me.
"Spinner!"
I get spun. Do my best to show as much ankle as my sister did when she danced. I laugh lightly, as if I'm dizzy from it.
"You want a husband?" Picker asks me.
He's got the bad eyes of a cave fish. He has to squint to see me right. I look down, all shy.
"Long as he's a good one," I say. "I get to pick."
The men laugh.
"No, lass," Picker says. "You don't get to bloody pick. Head talk does that. Best blood gets top mare, and you ain't top mare, so you get what you get. Still want a husband?"
I nod.
"Better than smelling like fish day in, day out."
A great show is made of giving me a little plate of dry eggs as they discuss what to do with me. The eggs are tasteless, like everything else I've eaten since my spit boiled off my tongue. When I've scraped the last bit from my plate, Duncan leads me away to a room guarded by a couple lads. The smell of clustered bodies washes out as the door swings open. Near on 20 girls are nestled on old mattresses with dirty sheets, huddled together for fear.
"Which of you's the youngest?" Duncan asks. A girl who couldn't be more than 11 points to a girl even smaller than her.
Leah is...
A look of pain goes across Duncan's face as he kneels and motions her over. You want to go home to your family, little one? She nods, terrified. He extends a hand. She doesn't take it until the other girls prod her forward. Duncan guides me into the room and takes Leah out. The door slams shut behind me. Half the girls dead silent, staring at the stained sheets like they're reading palms. Others huddle together. With the boys gone, I look around in case there are plants. But if there are, they're good enough actors to be in the Hyperion Opera. The room stinks of fear. Not one of them older than me, and to scared girls, that means something. I cross my arms and say in a low whisper, "They're going to rape all of us until we have brood." They stare at me. Then they'll do it again, and again and again, till your belly's like an empty water skin. Some of you will quit and take it. Rest of you, they'll hook on Greyline and you'll beg for prick just to get a high. They'll probably share those ones. I look around at the wide eyes. Some of the girls have started to bawl. How many of you have husbands? I ask. A freckle-faced girl in her early 20s raises her hand. She nudges another girl, a little younger with long pigtails, until the girl raises her hand too. How many of you are aged north of 16? About half raise their hands. How many of you had brothers or pas killed? They all raise their hands. How many had brothers or pas cry like babies as you were dragged away but didn't lift a bloody damn finger? They stare at me, all too ashamed to raise their hands. The dead are honoured. The cowards are hidden. It's all the answer I needed. This is right. Any of you rats? I glare around at them. Good. 'Cause where I'm from, rats get their eyes stabbed out. Some of the girls flinch. Freckles crosses her arms as if she'd like to see me try. The smallest of the girls, one with skin almost as dark as mine and a shaggy mane of hair, glares around at the other girls, daring them to be rats. Tails, the one with the husband, looks down. I reach back down my skirts and find the head of the strip of teeth. I jerk, wincing as the epoxy pulls off half my skin with it. Holding the strip in my hands, I pull the pliers from my shoe. With all of them watching, I stick the pliers in my mouth, secure the iron bits to my second back molar and jerk hard. The tooth doesn't come out straight, but I saw Victra plop out a baby standing up without a single yelp. I rock twice and jerk again, using both my arms. The blood pours down the back of my throat as the tooth and root burst out. I hold up the pliers, open my mouth so they all see, and then I swallow the blood. I take another one of Fig's teeth from my strip and shove it against the wound. There's a sizzle, a pain that shoots through the root, through my nostril, into my eyes and brain. It's the second I've put in. I wipe the blood from my lips and smile. Tails gives a little gasp. The rest of the girls look terrified, except Freckles, who tilts her head, and the little one with the mane. We'll call her Lion. She claps her hands together until Freckles shushes her. I ain't from here. Where I'm from, these fucks killed me whole clan, I say. I ain't here to be no brood sow. I ain't here to be no Greyline whore. I ain't here to be saved. I'm here to kill those bastards. Any of you sisters got similar intentions, you better speak up, or you're going to be a slag toy till you see the veil. I hold up the pliers. So who wants to save themselves? Little Lion bounds forward. We swallow our pulled teeth so they don't find them hidden under the mattresses. After I explained what Fig's teeth do, Freckles got all but two of the girls to get in line. She held them down when I pulled the teeth and made sure they were quiet. One wailed so hard, the guards outside beat the door with their rifles. After their teeth were stripped, I secured each of Fig's devices myself, and Freckles helped Lion clean up their blood. I find out from the others that Lion is Mora, Breya's sister. Only Tails and another smaller girl refused my offer. I sit down next to Tails as Freckles cleans up the last girl. She's murmuring under her breath how we shouldn't do this, how they'll hurt us. I put an arm around her. Listen, you don't have to join in. All I need is you to be quiet, right? We'll get you home.
You're gonna get us killed, she says. You're crazy.
Yeah, I say, realizing nice isn't gonna work.
Yeah,
but you remember what I do to rats.
She stabs their eyes out,
Lion says from behind me. Her hands are balled into tiny fists as she glares at Tails.
She stabs their eyes out,
Freckles adds. Several of the girls repeat it around Tails until she covers her ears. I lean in front of her.
Remember.
I bring my finger to my lips.
Shh.
I leave as dramatically as I can, but a thought catches me. Can you read? I ask her. She shakes her head. And now I've got a backup plan. They collect us mid-morning when a rumble comes through the walls. A transport waits outside. Some of the relatives of the girls come to see them off. The rest hide from their own shame in their chores, making up the boats and chiselling snow off the roofs. Some of the girls cry as we're pushed onto the transport, but none as loud as poor Tails. Others tongue their gums till I shoulder them. Lion and Freckles glare at the Red Hand militia as we board up. I slump forward and sit on the freezing metal bucket seat, keeping my eyes down as the door clamps shut. The guards don't chat much to us. They just smoke their burners. Some few women are with them. They think they're men, or at least they think they're better than us dumb sows because they've got guns and knives and pants and we're in skirts. A few of the girls are nauseous by the time the shuttle sets down. Freckles pukes a little in the corner. There aren't any windows, so the first time we get fresh air is in some cavern hangar that was carved ages back by claw drills. This is their fortress. After seeing the citadel of light, I almost laugh. Ambient light dies as we're led away into the main of the mine. Maybe I thought the Red Hand was something big back when I was in 121, but next to the Citadel Lion Guards or Barker Souls, and especially the Askamani, these louts are a joke. We spot maybe a couple hundred as we are led down an ancient grav lift into the township. A few boys whistle at us as we go. A few run up and pinch our cheeks before getting clouted by Picker and Duncan, who smiles at us as if being nice will save him from bad dreams. They dump us in some old barracks for greys. Everything's rusted except the small sad affectations they added for the sake of us womenfolk. There are beer bottles with wildflowers, HCs playing old comedies, and a couple old hens who introduce themselves and inspect our armpits. They check our teeth for cavities, and when they see our irritated gums, they murmur to themselves about gum disease. Then they bring in an old yellow man with a limp to check between our legs for lice and other maladies, as if we're the ones who'll have them. It's all I can do not to crumple the yellow skull with a beer bottle when the cold forceps spread me so he can look inside. He pats me gently on the knee and looks at me in sorrow. When we're done and I'm confirmed not diseased, they let us alone with the other newcomers from other towns along the coast. No one mingles. Freckles eyes the other girls like intruders. I see Tails taking a step toward them,
and click my tongue. She stops and stares at the ground. They give us a precious pack of burners for being honourable lasses and treat it like it's Venusian chocolate. The girls look like idiots smoking them down. Most have never even had tobacco. A few puke. I take the burner from Lion's fingers and tear it apart.
How old are you even?
I ask.
11. Going on 40, Freckles says. She's crazy, that one. I ain't crazy,
Lion protests. You's the one in love with a grey.
Of the other girls, she seems to respect only Freckles' opinions. I raise an eyebrow at Freckles. Greys are risky business.
So mind your own. When are we going to do it? She asks.
Like I said, when they pair us off, we'll be alone then and able to get their guns. Make sure the other girls remember.
We've got to wait that long.
She glances back at Tails.
Known her since I was 5. She's going to tell them soon as we split up, soon as we can't see a rat.
You know that for a certain fact? I ask.
Well as I know anything.
I glance at Tails, who sits in the corner by herself. Freckles is right. She watches the two hens chatting with each other on the far side of the room. Make a distraction for me, I tell Freckles.
What are you going to do?
Fix it. She's about to press for particulars when Lion, who was eavesdropping, screams at the top of her lungs and runs for the hallway. The hens curse and pursue. I bolt up. Only the girls in the room now. I slip toward Tails. She looks up as I approach. I kick her hard as I can in the jaw. Something pops. She sprawls sideways with a cry. I can't take chances, so I pull back the hands covering her face and try to stomp on her jaw. Finally, my heel gets through and her hands go a little slack. I stomp again until I hear the bone crack like wet wood. I wheel back around, locking eyes with the staring girls. I don't like rats, I say. The newcomers look away. My girls are horrified. I return to Freckles and sit back down, throbbing all over. Tails sobs through her broken jaw like she's dying.
Shit, Freckles mutters. What you got against rats?
Her smile sours till her face mirrors mine as we listen to Tails moan until the hens come back. They drag a crying Lion by her ears. No one sits within 10 meters of Tails. The hens demand to know what happened. After seeing what I did to Tails, the girls greet the question with ominous silence. Tails's explanation comes out as a pathetic moo. She'll live, but she won't be talking for a while. Stupidity is not a victimless crime. I won't let these girls pay for her big mouth. The hens feed us after the burners and make us each drink a cup of bitter wine, making sure it all goes down. It's got something in it. I feel the buzz right off, a slow warmth and wooziness. The whole time they're talking about what an honour we're about to receive. Freckles glowers as they feed Lion the same size of cup they gave us. They line us up in a big room like dolls. I think it's around night time. Hard to tell because the mind's shut off from light. Didn't feel this as a girl. Days had rhythm in Lagerloos. Could tick the clock on paper by the measure of my mother's sounds and smells. Door creak, 5 in the morning. Coffee smell, 5:20. Click of tin breakfast plates, 5:30. Here there's no rhythm, because there's no life. Just like the cell. Can already tell there's too many young men and not enough to distract them or keep them loyal. If the obsidians are tearing them apart bad, as everyone says, then they must be wondering why they're fighting, why they're not trying to make it in the city like sane people. This ain't the Red Hand we feared. I don't need the parasite to smell the decay. Is it right to risk these girls? Is it better if they just take it and survive? If I can't find Volga and Victra, if they can't somehow help us,
I think I just signed the death notes for nearly 20 girls. But it's too late to go back. We wait in the lines in a big cold room where mine tin pots used to practice their shooting. The burning of candles and the carpets they've put down on the floor can't obscure the old purpose of the room or the holes bullets chewed in the far wall. We wait till my lower back starts to ache and Lion starts to whistle to the annoyance of the hens. One smacks her ear. Lion just grins up at her. Then Picker comes in, with Duncan trailing behind him, and tells us to mind our manners, to be polite, to curtsy, because we're about to meet the Red Mother herself, maker of the Red Hand, sister of Ares, Nerol O'Lycos. But the Reaper's uncle wasn't Ares, and all the girls know it. Another 10 minutes. Then some mean, mean bastards come in and face us down like a firing squad, but they don't have that many guns. Most are men, a few women, not boys like the others, but hard and rangy and evil, with eyes like pickers, and a quietness about them that's so inhuman, I think all the girls will shit themselves and spill our plans. Good thing I took out the rat. Then she comes in. The woman has filled my nightmares from the bunks of the Telemannus estate to the freezing holes I slept in next to Volga and Victra. The woman who made red butter of Tyrion's head. Who I remembered ruining my family every time Volga taught me to strip down her rifle. My fingers would shake from the cold, from the fear of the pursuing hunters. But all I had to do was picture her face to remember why I wanted to learn Volga's weapons. Harmony's face is half hell, half faded beauty. And she was a beauty. There's lines there now. Sour crow's feet. But in her time, she would have outstripped my sister by a kilometre. She would have made the boys beg for a twirl of the skirts. Harmony stalks forward now with a weird, lazy carelessness that I've only seen in soldiers. No preening, no boasting. Just a slump of the shoulders and a forward trajectory. She looks at us. Then she smiles with her eyes, a brilliant, incandescent loveliness that makes me tilt my head, wondering if I got it all wrong, or am I that drunk? Sisters, Harmony says, before rushing forward to greet us, going down the line, cupping our faces, kissing us on the foreheads, on the mouths, on the eyes. Sisters, she says, sisters, tonight you receive an honour most red women only dream of. Tonight you will be chosen as wives by heroes of the red people. How fearful you must be, standing here on the precipice of a life more glorious than you could know. There was life before this, the life you thought you had. That they trained you to be accustomed to, the life you thought was your destiny. That life was a lie. The life of a slave is no life. And there is this life, the true life, the second life of liberation, the life not of clan, but of the people, one people united against oppression. United against the cruelty of the slavers who once called us by numbers and those who still seek to shackle us. She sees a girl crying, not one of mine. I know you're fearful. I feared once. I feared when my children were dying of a cancer of the lung. I prayed to the Reaper for them, the real Reaper who guards the veil, not the man who turned his back on his people. I prayed to the Reaper to judge them innocent and lovely and keep them in this world. But the Reaper sorts only the just and the pure in the next life. I prayed and prayed, but who was there to answer my prayers in this life? Who was there to save my children? No one. They died. She scoops a handful of dirt and lets it trickle out her clenched fist. I watched them wither. I watched my husband wither after them. I watched the sons of Ares wither, not to death, but to the temptations of this world. She discards the dirt. When I was afraid, I always prayed as you pray. But no one is there to answer. Our salvation comes in the next world. We must make our own in this one. That is why the Red Hand fights. She looks at each one of us, eyes lingering on Lion. She smiles down at her. Lion does not smile back. You are the bravest of our people. You do not hold weapons. You do not fight, but you carry the banner of liberty. She looks at Freckles. The girl can't meet her gaze. You carry the bloodline of our people. Without women, without wives, what are a people but a doomed matchstick? To blaze and glare light, and then to die. She looks at me. It is the hardest thing I have ever done to hold her gaze and nod, but I do. But you are the wildfire, the fire that spreads. Without guns, without ships, you are the soldiers that bring us the future. You are the wives of Red. I envy you. She nods so convincingly. I envy you. If I could still bring life into this world, I would not need this. She rests her hand on her pistol. But we all have our duty. Mine is to protect you. If your husband beats you, if he is cruel to you, come to me, or any of the women you see here today, and we will sort it. Duncan takes a swig from his flask and stares at the ground in the line of Red Hand militia. But the Red Hand women with Harmony nod, brainwashed, pathetic, or evil. I hate them so much more than the men. Many of the girls, especially the newcomers, find themselves nodding too. Either they buy the bullshit, or are drunk, or afraid, or wanting the approval of the older women. Most of my lot stand rigid or shake with fear, not because they're smarter than the other girls, but because we have a plan. And once they've grasped the wheel, tiny as it may be, they feel they have control. They have a chance. I know, because it wasn't Victra who saved me from the Ascomani, or from getting sucked out her ship. Volga and I did that. It made me feel alive in a way I never had. One day you may hold a weapon, Harmony promises. But today your duty to your people is to bear the seed of your husband to fruition, to grow our union with new blood and foster boys that will become warriors, girls that will become wives and one day warriors as well. I salute you. You are the best of our kind. May the veil wait for you. And may the blood of our people flow strong.